from a lady whose husband was in the IMF. Do you know what the IMF is? Okay, IMF is the Israeli military force, and her husband's name is Zvi, S-V-I. He lives in Chicago now. But a buddy of his, I'm going to move this around a second, a buddy of his is still in the military in Israel. And I just plugged that back in, fellas. And he wrote an email to Zvi, and then Zvi showed it to his wife, and his wife sent it to me. So this is only third hand, so I don't know how accurate it is. No, it is. Believe me, it is. What he said is this. In 20 years, in the Israeli military, I have not seen this much activity. He said, I'll bet you're not hearing that in the media in the United States. He said they are putting up military posts that weren't there before along borders, right now, today. They are putting up missile defense systems. And they are also adding people to full-time duty that were on leave. So it looks like something is imminent there. And we're not hearing about that. You got to wonder why. Let's see if this works. This would be cool if it actually works. Let me see. Make this happen here. And go forward. Ah! Magic. That's a rare picture. That's a famous sculpture that stands in front of, actually on the Hudson, in front of the United Nations. And it's a picture of this very powerful man who is doing a very strange thing. What in the world is he doing there? Well, what he's doing is in his right hand he has a mallet, and in his left hand he seems to be banging on something. It's a sword, but it's been ruined because he's mashing it with the mallet, and what he's, of course, doing is beating it into plowshares. You want to turn to Isaiah 2? Isaiah 2. What's written on this statue isn't quite accurate, so you need to see what Isaiah 2 actually says. Isaiah 2 and verse 4. This is speaking, obviously, about somebody in charge of earth, where nations exist now, today. And it says, and this is coming, Isaiah 2 and verse 4, he shall judge between the nations and shall rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares. And their spears into pruning hooks. A nation will not lift up sword against nation, neither will they learn war anymore. And what it says on the statue there at the United Nations is, we shall beat our swords into plowshares. And at first glance, that seems like a slight change, but let's consider this a minute. The United Nations was formed after two great world wars. And the history of humanity is really war. That's really pretty much what you find in history. Most of history is written about the periods between wars, what was going on between wars, what's happening during a war, why did it happen. And the history of mankind actually really is about war. We'll see that. And after two devastating wars, the nations gathered in 1945 in San Francisco. And they founded an organization. The organization is that one. It is meant to, I'm quoting, save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought up untold sorrow to mankind. And that's the preamble to the United Nations Charter, and it was established in 1946. So mankind realizes war is very bad. Cannot be allowed. Have to stop it. Let's get all the nations together and stop it. And, of course, the old question, how well is that working for us? It's an interesting concept, isn't it? This thing about war. Here we come into the first holy day of the fall, where the worst time in history, Christ explained it, will be a time like no other, the worst time ever or ever shall be. And it will be a great war. And God will end it. Otherwise, mankind wouldn't exist anymore, he says in Matthew 24. And so, the war comes to an end. But that's not at man's hand, that's at God's hand. Mankind knows war's bad. Really, really bad. Adam Shanker took some video. This is from, by permission, from the History Channel. One second here. We have to ask this question first. Why does God tell us now that there will be no more war? After all, consider that if we know there's no more war, as we've heard so many times, that there will be no more war in the kingdom. God, after he comes, will set up a kingdom. There will be no more war. Here's a question for us, though. Why does he tell us that now? It's not believable. We've never had a history where there is no war. How would that be possible? And how is that motivational to us now? There will be no more war. Why does God tell us that now? That's a good question. After all, talk is cheap. Let's just get there. We're going to go through great wars, maybe the great one before in our lifetime before this is all over. Why tell us this now? What's this about? Well, Adam Shanker videotaped something, and you need to see it. What are they looking at? This is at New York's Times Square.
Oh, my God! We just all got to stick together and look out for one another. I mean, the president has everything. He has the power.
This is September 11th, 2001.
It's the face of the earth. These animals, they don't deserve to live on this earth. We should retaliate it right away because not give them a chance at all to regroup. That's it. And this, I wish that it'll be done today.
Nobody's respecting life anymore. It's ridiculous.
We have to mobilize the military. This is what happened.
You know, it makes us look like idiots, really.
Makes us look like idiots.
The face of the earth. These animals, they don't deserve to live on this earth. We should retaliate it right away because not give them a chance at all to regroup. That's it. And this, I wish that it'll be done today.
Do you remember?
The face of the earth. These animals, they don't deserve to live on this earth. We should retaliate it right away because not give them a chance at all to regroup. That's it. And this, I wish that it'll be done today.
A legitimate set.
This nation stands with the good people of New York City.
Remember this?
And New Jersey and Connecticut. As we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people. Soon.
Watch his surprise as he tries to talk. The outpouring of anger, the outpouring of what we would call righteous indignation against what had happened to the United States. Why had this happened? What was wrong? We have to have justice. We have to have vengeance. We remember that day. We have to get these people. Right? Isn't that right? Why is mankind drawn to war? Our best efforts at peace all fail. Well, there are some people that need killing. Isn't that right? Well, there are elements of peace. What those people were saying, and what probably all of us thought and felt and maybe even said in 2001, don't match this. We are to live in harmony with one another. But you can't live in harmony with people who kill you and fly airplanes into your building. Don't be proud. Be willing to associate with people of low position. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not proud. Don't be conceited. Well, I'm one of the most humble people I know. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Well, no, but when they're evil, they pretty much need to get it back. After all, how are they going to learn? Be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everyone. And by the way, these are just different translations of what we've already read hundreds of times. This is all biblical. Elements of peace. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live in peace with everyone. Who's included in everyone? Who's excluded from everyone? Do not take revenge, my friends. Leave room for God's wrath, for it's written, it's mine to avenge. I'll repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you'll be heaping coals of fire on his head. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You mean I have to be a pacifist while they're killing me and my friends and family, and I let them do it? No, that doesn't work. Sorry to show you this, you've seen it. But remember what people were feeling this day.
The plane coming down. Oh, is it?
That is it.
This is terrorists.
So what?
Well, I don't have any fucking
This is what our enemies do. We are to pray for them. We are to feed them when they're hungry. We are to forgive them. Oh, no. Not when it's this bad. This is over the line. That's too far. We don't forgive this. Let's get them. Man's inhumanity to man demands justice. If someone destroys thousands of innocent lives, we have to go to war with them. It is written someplace. If someone makes the wrong face at me or doesn't say hello, I have to get them. We're going somewhere with this. These people think the same thing. They think God tells them what to do. They're guided by God to do this to us. Well, we know that's not true. So we're guided by God to do things to them. Well, obviously, if they want to get all excited and, well, we'll just have to blow them up. They don't have the right to live on this earth, that man said. This is what happens when you touch America. This is what happens when you come after us. We pay you back. You kill one of ours, we kill 100 or 1,000 of you. And that's the attitude of war, isn't it? Isn't it? The human mind that we all have is not immune to war. And when we're in God's church and we're in the process of conversion and transformation, that doesn't make us immune either. Here's why. When there are conditions of potential loss or loss, our response is to go to war. I don't mean attack and invade Afghanistan. I'm talking about just get verbally abusive. Get even. Get justice. But it's easier to point at whole nations doing it than it is at individuals. We'll see, do that too. We're going to do that too.
Face of the earth. These animals, they don't deserve to live on this earth.
We should retaliate it right away because that gives them a chance at all to regroup. That's it. And this, I wish that it'll be done today.
I wonder, in the kingdom, look at that face. By the way, I've seen this video a couple times, as you can probably guess. There's a woman who's not in this frame right here, who's just out of the frame over on this side, who, as he's ranting like this, and as we all admit, justifiably so, she's doing this at him from behind. What are you doing? Not everybody's like this, but you can get people mad enough to kill anybody. If it's necessary to defend themselves or their loved ones, they'll do it. Anybody can do it. If he had a gun, he would have, and he knew who to shoot, he'd have done it. You can see the anger. He would have done it. All right, let's talk about this. We are going to learn today why God tells us now there will be no more war. That's your title. No more war. Here's a clue as to why he tells us this now. After all, we're going through wars. We will go through the worst war, perhaps in our lifetime. Why tell us this now? Here's a clue. When God gave the Ten Commandments, the great law, at Mount Sinai, human beings hear it this way. You better not, and here's another thing you better not, and another thing you will not do. Here's what he really said. You will not have other gods before me. As an example, they're all started out that way. In other words, there's a time coming when you won't do that. There's a time coming when there will be no more war. There's a time coming when everyone will not have any other gods before me, he said. That's really what he said. In Hebrew, you can see it. Why tell us this now? Well, the answer to that question is, it's us, he's telling now. Virtually nobody understands this at all. Otherwise, why did we go to Afghanistan? What's the point? God fights our war. No, he doesn't. God backs us fighting our own wars. We all know how humans are interested in self-defense, and what kind of God would he be if he had to defend everything we do? Humans don't balance emotions when they're threatened with loss. They become unbalanced in their emotions. It's amazing how unbalanced we'll get. If we're threatened with loss, minor or major, we're unbalanced automatically. Now, on the day after the 9/11 attack, President Bush, and you probably don't remember him saying this, proclaimed a crusade against terrorism. The Arab reaction around the world was horrific. And even those friendly to America said that was a bad idea to use the word crusade. He knew what he was doing when he said it. We're going to have a second crusade. Those people have put together a religious war, and we're going to go back and fight a religious war with them. But he changed. And the reason he never used the term again is so we could have Arab allies to help us out in the wars we've been fighting. course, we probably could have gone to God and asked him, but that didn't come up. That didn't come up. Watch this.
This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people...
Now he's surprised by the reaction. He tries to talk. How dare they go against the USA? Because they were religiously guided to do that. That's why. That's your answer. What's so wrong with that? God told them to do it. After all, if God's telling you to be aggressive and manage his kingdom and get rid of the infidels, how wrong is it to have murdered all those people? It's God's will. Think about it. Stop. Think about it a minute. When we talk about the Day of Trumpets, we're saying Christ is coming back to stop a war that's getting to the place where mankind would annihilate themselves. We rise into the air, 1 Thessalonians 4. We rise into the air, we meet him, Zechariah 14. And in that day, his feet will be on the Mount of Olives. And of course, 1 Thessalonians 4 says, and we shall ever be with the Lord. So obviously, we're going to be with him on Mount Zion. And we are absolutely going to fix this problem. Kind of like 9/11. All these people are murdering each other, fighting against God. Have to stamp that out. Hey. There will be no more war. The attitude is to be the opposite of war. The attitude that people of God has is serve your enemy, love your enemy, forgive your enemy, feed your enemy. Yeah, but there's a limit. No limit. Well, it's easy for God to say, no, he did it. He did it in 31 A.D. He did it. Oh, yeah. Okay. See, here's what happens. We get excited, and then we forget that God tells us he fights the wars. He fights our personal wars. He fights our group wars. He isn't the God of war. But war fills this world. Now, what we have to do is just consider, please, just consider how many levels conflict permeates our world. We're in a world that's filled with conflict between spouses, between families. We have sibling rivalry. You have gyms and stadiums professionally and college. Today, college. Filled with frenzied fans, cheering as if their team would lose, it would be a matter of life and death, and vice versa. If they'd win, it'd be a matter of life and death. What did I say last Sabbath, right? Thursday night, it proved out. See, I'm a prophet, see? Some of you know what I'm talking about, some now, okay. But anyway, this year I have faith that the Bears will win the Super Bowl. But then that's just misguided faith. I said, okay, well, ta-da. All right. How much of this do we do ourselves? Well, of course we're human. We do it ourselves. On the political front, what? What's not to be done? What's not okay? What's illegal? What do you get in trouble for by saying about your opponent? You can't say that. No, there's nothing. No holes barred. Gangs. They rule neighborhoods. Wear the wrong color, stand in the wrong place, and you probably will be shot at or killed. You don't know the right gang sign. You don't have the right colored kerchief or clothes. You're in the wrong block, and you are probably going to be harmed. ethnic groups, regional groups, competing religions, power blocs, all willing to battle for their cause. And you notice something interesting about all this? None of that's military. Not a single thing there is state-sponsored. None of it has a single smart bomb. It's because we're in a world of conflict. Actually, Paul said he was in conflict with himself. This world is a world of conflict. There's a good reason for it. We'll take a look at that in a little bit. War is really easy for humans. It's easy for us to take offense at things. It's easy for us to be hurt, to take revenge, get even. Humankind finds war a very easy choice. Our world's actually filled with it. But it's not the way God originally designed things to work. And here's how it's supposed to work. It is, however, the way that the God of this world ordered this kingdom, and his kingdom that we're living in or around, says this. In 2 Corinthians 4, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, speaking of the world, who do not believe lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. They're blinded. The world is blinded. That's why showing our booklets to a relative, that's why trying to convert someone at work, or to explain what you're doing when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles to a friend, doesn't work, because the world is blinded. And it's blinded by a very simple thing, self-preservation. That's what Mike was talking about. Mr. Helwig explained it. Self-sacrifice is fought forcibly by self-preservation. That's what Paul talked about. I find a law in my members, he said. And why is commonplace this thing we call war? Well, it abounds because God is on the sidelines. He has allowed himself to be put there. He's allowed himself to step away from control and inspiration and instruction of mankind at large because somebody told him to. Who can tell God what to do? In the Garden of Eden, parents of humankind decided to live apart from God and determine right and wrong for themselves, because Satan said, oh, you can have that fruit on that tree of knowledge of good and evil, because then you'll be like God and you'll know what right and wrong is yourself. Oh, it looks good. Let's do that. And they did. And that choice set our world on a course in which war is the fundamental part. Now, if you don't think you're at war with things, just consider the next time you have a tendency to try to protect yourself, your reputation, your stuff, someone you love, and realize self-sacrifice, as Christ gave it, without expectation of return, that kind of concern for life is rare, if impossible.
On December 7th, 1941, during a two-hour sneak attack on the American Pacific Fleet anchored at Pearl Harbor, Japanese Navy pilots scored a near-complete victory. Almost 85% of the American fleet was either damaged or destroyed. It was one of the most devastating losses in the history of the United States. This is where their paths would cross.
And so, just like with George Bush, America demanded we go get them. So President Roosevelt stood up and said this.
Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
Now the long and bitter time of fighting in Europe was over, and all attention turned to the Pacific. Intensified effort from the air reflected our wish to avoid the cruelly costly prospect of a land invasion of Japan.
We wouldn't want to kill any of our own people.
A new era began the morning a single bomber, instead of the usual hundreds, delivered an ultimatum.
And so an age came to be where we could kill each
other. On board the battleship Missouri, General Douglas MacArthur accepted the surrender. World War II was at an end. Hundreds of thousands came home. A great many others did not. And on far beaches lay rusting reminders of flame and bitter violence. Time and the sea would erase them, but the nation's debt to the men who brought them there would remain.
What did that cost? We were attacked in December 1941, just like we were in September 2001. Unprovoked, we thought. And we had to get even. It's just the natural course of events. And obviously God is behind that. God will help us because we are God's people in our righteous might. We will win through, so help us, God. That's what he said. Now, God did help the United States because obviously the tyranny over the nations that would ultimately be make it possible for the gospel to be brought to the world, as Matthew 24 explains, has to be done. Those nations, blessed by God through Abraham, actually did have to be protected by him. But mankind doesn't understand how much we're to rely on him. And so, guess what? We just walked away from him again and took care of it ourselves. I mean, there's story upon story about the miracles of the Second World War. There is a pride, though, in USA power, in American power, in our manifest destiny. And justly so. God has blessed his people. But we might not realize this. Just like every strutting marionette, very evil enemy of freedom that we fought, just like them, we have pride in our country to overwhelm and to control lives that would threaten us with loss. Now, you know, it's very easy to be altruistic after the war is over. And you take a look at the way we rebuilt Germany and Japan, but not during the war. The only way to stop these people is to kill them. War is most of written history. It's what we do to advance. It's how science and technology and even art advances. You say, well, I don't know that that's true. Well, Immanuel Kant wrote this: the state of peace among men living side by side isn't the natural state. The natural state's one of war. That doesn't always mean open hostilities, but at least an unceasing threat of war. In other words, we're either in a war or we're between wars. Is that fair? It is natural for states. But is that statement true for individuals, families, tribes? Is a state of war indeed the natural state for man? That's not fair, is it? Why did Immanuel Kant say that? I mean, this was toward the end of his life. He must have been cynical. I think he figured something out.
The Yanks arrived. At Camp Pendleton, California, rank upon rank of battle equipment awaits the long haul across the Pacific. Commanding officers watch a review and salute the flag with stern purpose.
Why are we doing this?
The 1st Marine Division is alerted for the Korean battle.
Korea? Remember when Korea attacked us?
The president has said we are not at war, but the United States, champion of democracy, sponsor of world peace, and defender of the oppressed, has been pushed around to the limit.
Pushed around.
From here on out, America will take steps.
That's for sure. How dare you get in our... They didn't even get in our face. We just you're not going to do that anymore, whatever it is you're doing over there in Korea. In other words, we have become so sure that the way to manage ourselves is to manage everybody else too. And if they even started to get out of the way, if there was even any what? Potential for us to lose, we have to pretty much kill them. Do you know why General MacArthur was removed as a five-star general? He said the only way to stop the North Koreans is to drop the bomb on them. And Truman said, oh, now you have to not talk like that. And he wouldn't stop, so he fired the men. We're going to see what he said about that afterwards. But that's a warrior for you. The natural state of man. This is it, Romans 3. As it is written, there is none righteous. What is it? Who is included in none? No righteous. There's none. No, not one. Who's excluded? Well, righteous people. Nobody's excluded. Nobody is righteous. Remember, hey, think about it. The young man walks up to Jesus Christ and he says, good master, tell me what I must do to inherit the kingdom. Instead of telling him what he needed to do to inherit the kingdom, Jesus Christ said to him, don't call me good. Jesus Christ said, don't call me good, knowing he's a man. There, good doesn't emanate from humans. He said, the only one that's good is my Father, God. So, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. Of course, Jesus Christ had the Father in him. There is none that understands. There's not one that even seeks after God. They've all turned aside. They've all together become unprofitable. There's none who does good. No, not one. Their throat's an open tomb. In other words, if you open your mouth, you might as well be opening a grave because it's not doing any good. With their tongues, they have practiced deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. That's humans. Yeah, well, it's not good people. That's just the bad ones, you know. The ones who knocked the buildings down and attacked Pearl Harbor. Those people. We got to kill those people. What does it say in Romans 3:10? What's at the top of that? There is none righteous. No, not one. So we don't get to say, well, I'm better than you. We'll have to kill you because I'm righteous and you're bad. Their feet are swift to shed blood. It's funny, isn't it? You know, remember what the man said. They shouldn't be allowed to live on this earth, he said. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace they haven't known. By the way, that's from Isaiah 59. There is no fear of God before their eyes. There is the problem. And that's from the 36th Psalm. That's mankind. That's the description God gives us of ourselves. You know, if you ask God for an evaluation, God, could you help evaluate? Give me an evaluation. How am I doing? That's it. The natural state of man. Yeah, but that's not the church. I mean, you know, after all, that's Romans. That's that. But James 4. This is this. No, this is the church. If you read James 3 and 4, you'll see the context is the church. The church, James is talking to. Where do wars and fights come from you, among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure, but war in your members? Remember, Paul said the same thing. There's war in my members. You lust, you don't have, you murder and covet and cannot obtain. What members of God's church would be murdering? Christ said, if you hate someone, it's the same thing as murdering them. You fight, you war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. This is why God told us there will be no more war. You have to stop it now. If we're going to stop it when the kingdom starts on earth, we have to have already stopped it in us. You ask, you don't receive because, what? You ask amiss, that you could spend it on your own pleasures. Now, that, by the way, that doesn't mean that just because someone doesn't have a prayer answered the way they asked it, that, you know, you asked amiss. But this does say this, that happens at times, that we ask amiss in a selfish way. This is speaking of the church. You want to check it. James 3 and 4. It's the context. Now, of course, God's people are human. 1 Corinthians 3 shows that, you know, Paul said, I fed you with milk, not with solid food, and until now you're not able to receive it. You can't take this, can you? And even now you're still not able. Because you're still carnal. These are people who are baptized, have God's Spirit. See, you're still carnal because there's a lot of physical drive in them. For where there's envy and strife and divisions among you, you're not carnal and behaving like mere men. Well, his standard isn't like that. This is what his standard is. Of course, it's hard for us to see it now. But in the kingdom, now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house will be established in the top of the mountains, meaning his government will be established above all the other governments. And it shall be exalted above even the smallest of divisions of the governments, and all nations will flow to it. Right now, if you tried to establish a government that nations would flow to, it sure wouldn't be a government of peace. Because that's what the United Nations tried to do. It doesn't work. Many people will come and say, come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God of Jacob. He's going to teach us his ways. We don't know what we're doing. And then we'll walk in his paths. We'll know how to live. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. In other words, there's a path, a way of life, that's actually life as opposed to war and death and destruction and self-preservation and self-defense as opposed to selflessness. He'll judge between the nations. He'll rebuke many people because they need to be corrected. I put myself on the list. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation will not lift up sword against nation. Neither will they learn war anymore. No more West Point. No more Annapolis. No more Air Force Academy. No more Paris Island. Just no more. No point. No more military-industrial complex. It's gone. It just is gone. Because we don't need it. Because after all, we know American military might always win. And no matter what American military might sets out to do, we control the world. Because you pretty much have to kill them. How are they going to learn anything? 1975... learn who we are. Some of these shots, some of us remember. People tried to get away from the encroaching North Vietnamese army. They were in panic because they knew they'd be killed. This is the top of the U.S. Embassy, where we were landing helicopters on the only American soil left in Vietnam. We're fighting to get out of Vietnam. We were trying to help. They were grabbing every helicopter and plane and flying out to the USS Hornet. A light plane, look at this, a light plane landing on an aircraft carrier. There's one of the South Vietnamese officers who managed to save his own life. UE helicopters having to be dumped overboard because they don't belong on an aircraft carrier. People running from war. This is what America had done to these people by trying to control mankind. And so, the North Vietnamese Army walked into Saigon. And these are American tanks, aren't they, Hank? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Those are American. Those are, well, there's some T-44s there. And they took what they could and demolished our memory so they could sell North Vietnamese flags. After all, you got to go where the power is. The source of war. Islam. Hinduism, atheism. It's People who disagree with me, pretty much, that's the source of war. Now you have to go back to him. He's the source. Here's the real history of it. Isaiah 14, God says, "How are you fallen from heaven, Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground? You who weakened the nations." Are we in a nation? Have we been weakened by him? Sure. "For you have said in your heart," he says to Lucifer, "I will ascend to heaven. I'll exalt my throne above the stars of God, and I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I'm taking over. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I'll be like the Most High." And by the way, in Hebrew it doesn't say that. It says, "I will be the Most High." A warring spirit. A cherub of the three archangels. Real history? Ezekiel 28, "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, sardis, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, emerald, and gold. Workmanship of your timbrels and pipes prepared for you in the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones," whatever that is. "You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you." An attitude of war, of taking away from whatever anyone else had so he could be in charge. "By the abundance of your trading," "you became filled with violence. You sinned. Therefore I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stone." He has been degraded. He's had his job description changed. But he hates us because God's in us. And he would have us be part of the destruction of mankind if he could. And when we listen to that attitude of taking over from others, what we need to protect ourselves, to have ourselves exalted, we're listening to him. We're agreeing with him. "And you he made alive," speaking of us, "who were dead in trespasses and sin." This is the real history of war. We were part of this, he says, "in which you once walked according to the course of the world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience." And we can always go back to the sons of disobedience and become one again. "Among whom also we all conducted ourselves once in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by children, nature children of wrath, just as the others." So there's a warring, wrathful, selfish, destructive, life-defining way of life that defines life as needing self-defense. Needing to protect, needing to take. Otherwise, how can you possibly exist? This goes to the very root and the core and the foundation of a society that doesn't understand how to give to itself. This is a society that whoever dies with the most toys wins. Whoever has the most power is the most powerful. It's not what God says. But this is war. We're in the middle of a world of war.
The battleship Missouri, 53,000-ton flagship of Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet, becomes the scene of an unforgettable ceremony marking the complete and formal surrender of Japan. It's now within minutes of ending for good. General MacArthur speaks.
"We are gathered here, representatives of the major warring powers, to conclude a solemn agreement whereby peace may be restored. Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always. These proceedings are closed.
May peace be preserved.
Swarms of United States aircraft fly in formation overhead as the ceremony ends. The final United Nations victory has been won. The war is over. Peace is here.
No, no, it wasn't. And later,
he understood.
Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem basically is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescent and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh.
He had been fired by President Truman. That was his final address. He went on to speak at West Point, but that was his final address. And what he was doing is quoting there what he said earlier. And this concept that it's of the spirit, that mankind can't control themselves. We're not qualified. We're unqualified. Is so rare that here was a man of war, a warrior, who understood the only way to his peace was through war, saying, I don't think so. Mankind needs to change, he said. Very, very rare for somebody to get that. He got it. God has a standard not of war. It's a standard of peace. Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace. God's kingdom is a kingdom of peace. What we're about to see here is not human. What we're about to see is what God gives some people to understand. It doesn't come from our reasoning. It doesn't come from colleges. It doesn't come from science, it doesn't come from business, it doesn't come from a committee who has figured out how mankind can live together. It's wisdom, not from earth. This comes from another place. This comes from the Creator. It even says it. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield. Didn't Christ do that? Full of mercy and good fruit, which is, of course, from God's mind. Without partiality, without hypocrisy, complete selflessness, without expectation of return for good behavior. Now, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace. By those who make peace. That's an interesting Greek construction. Because peace doesn't break out. Peace doesn't happen. Peace is made. Peace isn't something that is, it's so peaceful. No, peace is made. It's made. You have to make it. Don't you? Isn't that what that says? It's something you have to act on to make. Peacemaker. It's an action. Not peace liver, peace enjoyer, peacemaker. What are we talking about? Well, this. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. So somebody cannot be a son of God without being able to make peace. So therefore, we have to learn how to not make war. And I'm not talking about the 60s where he said, make peace, not war, make love, not war. That's not the point. This is about being actually able to make real peace. We're about to see something here. That's an example of making peace. It actually happened. You may have seen this. Person's not in the church. No one knows what happened to this guy. But he decided he was going to do something when no one else knew how. People's Republic of China, Tiananmen Square. The great Chinese army was facing down protesters who had decided they couldn't fight the army. So they peacefully protested, and the army began to kill them for being there. The Chinese Republic says somewhere between 200 and 300 people were killed, more like 2,000 to 3,000. In the face of all that death, one fella decided, I'm going to make peace if they kill me doing it. Not this guy. Watch this. No one knows what happened to him. That's what it takes to stop them. No matter what they're ready to do to you. Don't fight back. He just wouldn't fight. I have to think about the tank commander who stopped and didn't run him over. There was a guy inside that tank that said, I'm not going to kill that kid. No one knows what happened to him after that. But it is worthwhile knowing that we can end the warring mind that's in us. Now, all of us have seen in the history of the church the warring mind. I know more about the Bible. I know more about administration. I know more about doctrine. I know more about righteousness than you. Let's form another group. Let's have a fight. How do we end that? Well, some thinking that doesn't fit humankind. Philippians 4 says, be anxious for nothing. Easy for him to say, huh? Yeah, it is. In everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Okay, look. First of all, we're in contact with God, so because we're praying, and we're actually in supplication. God, we need you. You don't need us. We need you. And we're thankful for what we have. Remember Paul said, I am confident, and I have literally become content in whatever state I find myself. I've gotten to the place where I can take it. And I'm glad to be here, he said. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Our heart is the core of us, the very being inside, if you will, what we really are. And our minds are reasoning process. That's going to be guarded with a peace that just isn't going to war. We won't war. We won't do it. Finally, brother, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report. If there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Not on what someone needs to be taught, not on what someone needs to be punished with, not on how you've been harmed or I've been harmed or those you're close to have been harmed, or frankly, whether or not the Green Bay Packers win the next game. I know how hard that is going to be, but meditate on these things. You know what'll happen? There will be